our 3-year-old son is a rather rambunctious little fellow, very mischievous, and he gets up to a lot of mischief. And in doing so, many times he leaves a trail behind him. And there are many times when I'm approaching him and seeing the various damage that he might have inflicted upon our home. And as I come to him and walking towards him, he already lifts his hands in defeat and he turns to me and he says, "I didn't do it, Abba. I didn't do it." And this is prior to my even having to tell him why I'm walking towards him, what I have to say to him, or even to ask him what exactly happened that caused the damage behind him. We expect people to be defensive. But to a certain extent, the reaction of a 3-year-old of "I didn't do it" perhaps is even indicative of what society, unfortunately, is about. To lift one's hands and to say "I didn't do it" is a statement also of shirking one's responsibility. And it's unfortunate because we expect it from a 3-year-old. But unfortunately, we don't expect it, but it very much exists even amongst adults. Do the same thing. And it's frightening when we look and analyze pockets of the Jewish population and we see that the concept of achrayut, the concept of responsibility, of accountability, is slowly withered away. Accountability, responsibility are essential to the foundation of Judaism. And I would even go as far as to say that without instilling and upholding these essentials, then really it would not be an exaggeration to proclaim that the Jewish world is at a loss and possibly can even be lost completely. The Torah is certainly aware of this danger. And therefore, the beginning of the Parsha of Ki Tetzeh, the Torah introduces a number of situations, scenarios, predicaments that a person may find himself in. Ki Tetzeh Lemilchama Aloivecha. When a person goes out to wage war with another nation as part of the Jewish people. And he might encounter an Eshet Yefat Toar, a woman from another nation, from a foreign land. Says the Torah, "V'ayta lecha leisha." If you decide that this woman is compatible, that you are interested, that you'd like to bring her under your wing, then you have to do so responsibly. "V'ayta lecha leisha." The only way to do so is by making her your wife. The Torah goes on and talks about shtei nashim, ha'achat ahuva ve'achat tznua. Person's married to two women, one which he embraces and loves dearly, and the other which he doesn't find as much favor with. Lo yuchal levacheret ben ahuva al ben tznua, the Torah warns. Should you have two sons, one from the beloved woman and one from the less desirable one? One is not allowed to decide, you know what, let me give the greater portion of inheritance of what the child deserves to the one who I love more, to the woman who I care about more, if she is not deserving, if she is not the mother of the bechor, of the elder son. The Torah warns that you have to behave once again responsibly. And you have to give the portion according to the just deserts. And finally, the Torah continues and says, the Parsha of Ben Sorer Moreh. Chalil v'chas, a person who has a rebellious son, a son who behaves tremendously destructive. He is void of fear of God. And in such a way, he threatens the very heart and existence of the family. And what are you to do with this child? The Torah instructs, as strange as it sounds, that this child is to be put to death. Ve'amru el ziknei iro. Prior to receiving this consequence, The Torah says you are to go in front of Ziknei Iro, in front of the Tamidei Chachamim, in front of the scholars of that city, and to say, Beneinu ze sorer umore. This child, our child, our son, is a rebellious one, is deserving of what he is about to experience, of what he is about to encounter. And as difficult as that is to state with regards to one's own child, one is expected to do so. Again, in a statement of responsibility. I recognize where this child stands, and I recognize as a result that so should be its consequence. And I believe that there is one of the most monumental Rashis that appears in this week's Parsha. Rashi comments on these three episodes that I described. Says Rashi as follows: Lo dibra Torah ela keneged yetzer hara. The Torah is talking with regards to all of these stories, to all of these accounts that may happen to us, with regards to our inclination, our desires, our longings. She'im ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu matira yisa'ena be'isur. If the Torah, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't find a way where a person could permissibly wed this woman that he sees, that he desires, we'd find a way to do it through transgression, through impurity. Aval im nasa, if a person decides indeed to go through with the prescription of the Torah and to marry her, sofo liyot snua, says the Torah, be aware of the consequence. Be aware of what might happen. This woman who you take as a result of lust and of desire, in the end you will not love her. She will become someone who is hated. Because immediately following this, we have the parsha of Ki tiyena le'ish shtei nashim, ha'achat ahuva v'achat snua. Indeed, immediately following is the story of a woman, of two women that you may marry. One who you love, one who you hate. And who is this woman who you hate? And how can one possibly wed a woman who he hates? If he indeed followed his desires, his physical longings, without calculating what may lay in the future with regards to that particular relationship. Uvechein, continues Rashi, V'sofo leholid mimena ben sorer umore, lekach nichzmechu parshiot halalu. Says Rashi, in the end, consequently, the child who will emerge as a result of this matrimony, of this matrimony which is not based on true love, which is not based on sincerity, that child will be a rebellious child who unfortunately will know his end by being put to death by a Bet Din. And what Rashi is describing here, Rabotai, is exactly the concept that is so crucial with which we began. The idea that one thing leads to another. The importance by which we have to take responsibility for our actions. The idea that there can be or that there are consequences, repercussions to the decisions that we make and to the directions that we embrace in our lives. How crucial it is for us to understand and to appreciate that. Says Rashi, this is a Jewish concept. Realize that whatever you do, whatever path you decide to take in your own lives, has effect. Take responsibility for it. It has a large consequence behind it. I recall, and unfortunately when we look in the generation that we live in, past generations as well, but obviously to me it's most blatant in the time that I live, how unfortunate it is that when we look around the Jewish world in many forms and fashions, the concept of responsibility almost is non-existent, or it certainly is not as vibrant as it should be or as it might well have once been. I remember one of the greatest advantages when I learned in Yeshiva University. So Yeshiva University, obviously, from its name, Kimshmo Kainhu, it was a yeshiva as well as a university. And therefore, it was divided by a dual curriculum. One would spend 3/4 of the day learning in yeshiva, 1/4 of the day, or maybe a little more, studying secular studies for the sake of advancing one's career. And I learned from Yeshiva University one of the most vital concepts that one could possibly learn as a student and really as a human being. And that was time management. Because if you wanted to be successful as a learner, if you wanted to promote your scholarship and to be able to learn properly, in depth, with analysis, you had to dedicate that time that you had to learning Torah, in which other yeshivot they had all day, you know that you had only 65% of the day to do so. Well, then you cherished those moments and you learned in a serious way, with serious mind and with focus, because that was the time that you were allotted. And vice versa, on the other hand, the person took time to learn Limudei Chol, secular studies, and wanted to advance his career and achieve within the secular studies, well, then he knew as well that he was limited with a certain amount of time that he could study for those secular studies, because he had to get back to his Torah learning as well. And there was this dual relationship by which one learned to value time. Time is of the essence. One trained themselves to manage the time that they were faced with. What an important idea. What a vital concept. What an essential for a person to be able to survive in this world, and certainly for a person to be able to monitor what it means to be a religious Jew. Recently I completed a course from a certain from a religious university here in Eretz Yisrael. And I have to tell you that I'm not sure exactly what I learned from the course itself. But one thing that I did learn was based on what I witnessed and what I saw from my fellow students. Students who themselves are religious, who themselves may coin themselves as frum, very holy, subscribing to Torah and mitzvot, yirat shamayim. And yet the behavior that I saw demonstrated by them, and demonstrated at the same time a complete irresponsibility, a complete lack of regard for what it means to be disciplined. Guys would come in, and in the middle of class, while a professor was lecturing, they turn on their cell phone. Not only would it be on, it would ring in the middle of class. They'd conduct conversations in the middle of class. Not only a lack of responsibility, but a chutzpah, a lack of regard, of respect, of derech eretz for the man standing in front of them, trying to teach them, sach hakol, in the end of the day, a skill with which they could use to help others. And yet the audacity exists. Fellas would come late to class constantly on a continuous basis, and when they would come late, they wouldn't even have the respect, they wouldn't have the decency to sit down and be embarrassed and be quiet, but they'd come late, and then they'd come in and they'd schmooze with their friends in the middle of the lecture. They would talk, they would eat, they'd get up to get a little bit of food, cell phone would ring, they'd go outside if it was more of an important, pressing conversation. And I thought to myself, what kind of behavior is this? How could a person call themselves a religious, subservient, responsible Jew, and yet act with such insubordinate behavior? How disturbed I was. How it upset me. How it disturbed my innards to realize that this is the situation in people who call themselves religious Jews. People who are supposed to understand the importance
of discipline in one's life have shown a complete disregard for what it means to be responsible. And lest we fool ourselves, Rabotai, and to believe that perhaps this only applies to individuals, so there are those selected few who behave as such. But it doesn't affect us as a nation. That is completely inaccurate. Because this type of behavior trickles down and affects the Jewish nation as a whole. There was an article which I referred to in the Sleepless Sermon a number of weeks ago, an article written by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, Shalita, a tremendous Rav who served as a Rav in Atlanta, Georgia, Beth Jacob, for over 40 years. So he writes in this article, which is called "Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word," the inability of politicians, of Jewish leaders to this day, in our modern time, to say, "I'm sorry," to take responsibility for their actions and for their poor decisions and for the dire consequences that they placed Klal Yisrael in as a result of their lack of vision, as a result of their lack of understanding. Says Rabbi Feldman, when Israeli politicians fail, they blame not themselves, but everyone else around them. And unfailingly, they manage to cling to office. Ours is a tradition in Israel of non-accountability. Our leaders never admit mistakes. They never apologize. Instead, they run for office again. They get elected again, or get appointed to even higher office. Being an Israeli politician means never having to say you're sorry. Despite their major misjudgments and failures, neither Shimon Peres, Ehud Olmert, or Ehud Barak has ever admitted an error or apologized to the public for their mistakes, much less displayed any contrition. Each one is riding high today, either reaching for or clinging to that heady drug called power and influence. Continues Rabbi Feldman, in truth, the Israeli tradition of non-accountability is not Jewish at all. On the contrary, apologies and regrets are an integral part of our tradition. Judaism offers the profound concept of teshuvah, atonement. We are always given the chance to repent and to ask forgiveness from God for our sins. But there is one condition. We have to specify the sin, and we have to be able to state that we regret it. Society has effect on this inability to say, "I'm sorry," and this inability to confront the problems, the mistakes, the errors, and lack of judgment that all of us are prone to make, but that all of us are expected to say, "I'm sorry for having done so." We need not look further. I always say that one of the greatest makot, the plagues that I think unfortunately will afflict the Jewish generations in the future, is the game of poker. Poker has become rampant not only in the secular society, but even in the Jewish home. Texas Hold'em, all of these various games that have to do with gambling. But if you look and read statistically what has happened, and you read articles about the effects of poker, the ideal of hard work is tossed out the window. I read recently articles which say that many college students drop out because they realize that they can make more money on the internet playing poker than they could to go through college and to earn a degree. Lost is the ideology of the sweat on the brow for the sake of production. Lost is the ideal of working hard. And this, my friends, undermines the essence of what Judaism is about. The idea of ishtadlut, the essential of working hard, of investing one's time and energy in an earnestness to be able to produce. Because it is not only the production, but it is the way that we get there. It is the way that we arrive at the production that counts. And unfortunately, it is not only in the secular world that we see this. In Eretz Yisrael, within the secular world, unfortunately, the numbers are very, very high statistically of the amount of people who are dodging the draft, who are not interested, who are trying to avoid supporting the IDF forces and being a part of the ideology of watching over Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish homeland. In the Haredi world, in the black hat world, you try to explain to yeshiva students that you can't build a productive society in a framework that is not teaching self-sufficiency. Eventually it catches up with you. Eventually it becomes instilled and embedded in the students, in the people, and they believe it. And that is dangerous and undermines the concept of Yagata Umatzata. You have to work hard in order to be rewarded. And the religious Zionist world suffers as well. Today, revealed a few weeks ago, I read an article which revealed that the highest percentage of students today that ever existed within the religious Zionist world have chosen to learn in yeshiva rather than serve in the army. Now, Chas v'Sholem, I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with learning in yeshiva. It's a fantastic opportunity. It's a necessity. It's also what protects Eretz Yisrael. But at some point, if we don't get it right, the statistics show that in 20 years' time, more than a quarter of the potential young men who could serve in the army will not be involved at all as chayalim, as soldiers. They won't be interested, and their main focus will be to avoid and to disregard this obligation, this most blatant responsibility that we have to our country, to Eretz Yisrael, and to the people around us. And therefore it paints a very bleak forecast in terms of what is yet to come. If we don't teach ourselves and instill our children with the concepts, the idea, the ideology of being responsible for who you are and what you represent. The Torah stems from teaching us this idea of shrugging responsibility, and in this week's parsha, the Torah warns against it. And it's interesting, because if you look at the text of the Ben Sorer Moreh, Rashi listed the consequences with regards to three issues. Eshet Yefat Toar, which will lead to a woman who is hated, which will lead consequently and finally to a child who is rebellious, this Ben Sorer Moreh. Why does Rashi end with that final scenario of this child? If you look at the text of the Torah, it's very strange with regards to the Ben Sorer Moreh. V'tafsu bo aviv v'imo v'hotziu oto el ziknei iro v'el shar mekomo. This child is not to be put to death privately. It is not a private trial that transpires with regards to his final decision. No. He is to be taken publicly. Shar mekomo. The gates that are open to the city. It is a public fanfare that takes place here. And then the parents say, Ve'amru el ziknei iro. They have to proclaim, this child does not listen to his parents. Listen to what the Torah says with regards to the consequence, how this punishment is given. All of the people in the city are to stone this child. V'chol Yisrael yishmeu v'yirau. All of Yisrael are listening and are seeing what is transpiring. Why is this? Why is it so important for the Torah to point out to us that everyone in unison says and everyone in unison acts towards this child And all of Yisrael hear and see what is going on with the punishment of this child, the Ben Sorer Moreh. What does this mean? And I think that the answer is rather simple. The Torah is telling us that the Ben Sorer Moreh is an example of what is yet to come. Lest we believe that a child could be rebellious. Lest we believe that a child could act with insolent behavior and act irresponsibly in the Jewish community. Lest we think for a moment that that does not affect the Jewish community as a whole. The Chol Yisrael Yishmu V'Yirau. The Torah wants us to understand and appreciate the importance of responsibility. B'nai Yisrael are made aware of the consequences that a person is liable for his actions. V'chol Yisrael, all of the Jewish people, should take heed in terms of what happens here. Because God forbid, if there is a lack of it thereof, then that can affect and threaten the success and the longevity of an entire nation, and not only of a young child. Hence, all of the mitzvot that follow in the psukim after these three episodes, Hashev Teshivim La'achicha, the mitzvah of Hashavat Aveda, to return something to someone or to its rightful owner when it's lost. Responsibility. You find something that's lost, bring it back to its rightful owner. Shiluach HaKan, before you decide to take the eggs of a mother bird, send her away. Be sensitive to the feelings even of an animal. Ki tivne bayit chadash v'asita ma'akeh. If you have a new house, make sure to put a fence around the roof so that chalila, God forbid, no one should hurt themselves. Act responsibly with regards not only to yourself and your family, but to all the people around you. The idea of achrayut, the essential of being accountable. This Chodesh Elul, this month of the great Yamim Noraim, the day of judgment, the day of personal assessment, the day of personal accountability and accounting, it is incumbent upon all of us to sensitize ourselves not only to our personal achrayut, our personal responsibility, but hopefully that will shed light with regards to the need for us to embrace a sense of national responsibility as well. And in Mirtz Hashem, if we see our lives as Jews with regards to our own lives, and our need to be responsible to each other, to one another, to ourselves, then we'll be zoche and be privileged to understand what it means to be responsible and accountable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Borei Olam as well. Shabbat Shalom. The question we can ask this Parshat Ki Teitzei: how many types of kilayim are listed in the Parsha, and what are they? Shabbat Shalom.